And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, and of course, my co-host is Aaron Varola.
Hey, what up, peoples? Wow, that was an energetic. Hey!
Yeah, caught me off guard there, because I didn't expect that kind of energy based on our pre-show conversation.
Yeah, you know, I just gotta bring the energy, man. Gotta, you know, I do look forward to these nights that we spend podcasting together and talking to our fans and discussing all types of fanboy culture and news and entertainment BS and all that good stuff. So excited, you know, even though it's been a relatively slow news week, as some of our other podcasting cohorts have mentioned, it is indeed slow. Yeah, but, you know, I had the distinct pleasure of, for those of you folks that haven't seen me tweeting about it, I had the distinct pleasure of sort of co-hosting the Batman on Film satellite episode where we focused predominantly on Star Wars, and really cool opportunity to speak with and interview, so to speak, Jason Ward of MakingStarWars.net, which I've been following for quite some time. So it was a really great episode. It was me, obviously representing Fanboy Garage. Rick Shu, the Batman on Film podcast, and then we were joined by Ryan Haas later in the episode, who was basically force ghosting us the entire time. So it was a really great conversation. We talked everything from The Mandalorian to other standalone Star Wars films, like the recently canceled Boba Fett film. And we did get, you know, Jason's thoughts on Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Your favorite subject.
You know, it was good. And I know, you know, Rick out there is still hoping for a for an Obi-Wan film, and I am vehemently standing against that idea. I just think that the Obi-Wan film would not – I don't really think we need that. And that's a topic for another day, another podcast, which if you want to hear some of my thoughts, please listen to – I forgot what episode number, but one of those earlier episodes where Rick actually joins our show.
Yes, and especially since Aaron can no longer pronounce Rick Shue, that'll be his last appearance on Batman on Film. So enjoy all of this history while it lasts.
Yeah. Well, he referred to he referred to Revenge of the Fans as Revenge of the Sith.
He did, which
and
was
I was like,
pretty
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, there we go. That's pretty much what we do. Just starting Sith left and right. But yeah, no, I think it was, you know, specifically we were talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, and one part of that conversation that we didn't bring up with Jason, which did come up later when Ryan officially joined, was the news that Ewan McGregor was cast as the Black Mask in the upcoming Birds of Prey film.
Yes.
It's really, really interesting.
It's really interesting. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you can look at that as anything but very exciting, positive news. When anytime you can cast an actor of that caliber in a role like that, I mean, it tells you, one, that they are really serious about this movie. They've assembled quite a cast for it. And yeah, I mean, these are the types of things that get me excited, like pre-production stuff and stuff about things that are in development, that doesn't really do it for me. But now you give me something like this, something that I can really sink my teeth into. Ewan McGregor as Black Mask, sure, sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I wasn't really, surprising, all out, all excited for Birds of Prey. But, you know, you cast Ewan McGregor as Black Mask, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, it's like tickle me pink here. I'm a little excited here. So, you know, he, you know, to your point, Chris, he is certainly a high caliber type actor. He brings lots of chops. I don't necessarily think we've really ever seen him in a villain role. That's going to be really cool to see.
And it's a part he could really kind of have fun with, and you know, it's an over-the-top type of character. That yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame we don't have Vanessa on the show to give us his backstory.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you guys listening or who may be new to this show or episode, go to the Revengers podcast, and I don't even know which one it was, but
it was a while ago pretty, now. But
yeah, it's a pretty epic synopsis.
You can get all caught up on Black Mask.
Yeah, no, seriously, all caught up. Yeah, so I mean, it's a. If I'm really being honest, I'm kind of bummed that they're using him in Birds of Prey and not in a Batman capacity.
Well, yet anyway, I mean, it doesn't. Mean
oh yeah,
that,
who knows how that'll change? Yeah. That's a good point. That's
you know, I mean, it's good. All well. Here we go again with this stuff, but in theory, it's part of the same universe, right? So, Birds of Prey are in the. And when I say universe, I'm not talking like DCU, DCEU. I'm just talking like Birds of Prey specifically come from the Batman universe, right? They're Batman right. characters that branched out. So it's not crazy to think that you can introduce him in that movie and he could pop up in a Batman movie. You know, it's not, right. they're not exclusive.
Yeah, that's a good point. And for those of you folks that don't remember, long lost show. I don't remember if it was on Fox, but there was a Birds of Prey show way back.
Yeah,
when.
It wasn't 90s. On Fox, but it was what is now the CW. But I think it was the WB back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before the WB and UPN merged and became the CW.
That's right. Yeah. Was it like in the early 90s or was it like in the 2000s? I feel like it was around Smallville.
I don't think it was the early 90s. Let's see.
No, late 90s. Like maybe, was it late 90s?
It was.
Show
2002.
Yeah, so it was around at or around the start of Smallville.
2002, yeah. Well, obviously, it was only on for one season, so it lasted from October 2002 to February of 2003.
Oof, that is a short-lived
season.
Only because
episodes.
It didn't have Batman, I think.
Well, it had Batman in the very first episode. They do a flashback to like the Killing Joke scene where Joker shoots Batgirl and paralyzes her. And there's a Batman in that flashback and a Joker. Batman wasn't a part of the series, though.
Right, yeah. Right. Anyways, so hopefully it'll be better than the TV show.
Well, yeah.
I'm sure it will be. Should be you and McGregor. And they, you know, they actually, they did release the cast of the show, which had some controversy, or it's not show, cast of the movie, which had some controversy wrapped around it, which I don't understand the big deal about it.
Well, everything now is controversy.
Yeah. Right? Whatever.
Yeah.
But, cool. All right. What else we have?
So, you know, I know we've spent a lot of time on the podcast here talking about the now famous December 21st weekend. At the box office. And so far, as we thought, two of the four movies that were going to be opening on that actual day, not counting Mary Poppins Returns, which comes out 2 days earlier, have now dropped off that date. So the first was Alita Battle Angel. That moved to February of next year. Mm-hmm. And now we get the news that the untitled Deadpool movie that was scheduled for that date is now, not only is it titled, it's titled Once Upon a Deadpool, but it's also now opening on December 12th for a 12-week limited engagement right up until Christmas Eve. And then that's it. And that is the PG-13 cut of Deadpool 2 for the younger people who are going to be on holiday break. To go check it out. So not only have they edited it to get to a PG-13, but they also shot some new footage for this movie that basically it's like a framing sequence. And it's going to be Ryan Reynolds and Fred Savage in a parody of scenes from the classic film The Princess Bride, in which young Savage was told the movie's main story by his grandfather, Peter Falk, who read it from a book. So the adult Fred Savage will now be in this doing kind of a takeoff on that. So, you know, I don't really have a feel at all for what I think this movie is going to do at the box office. I didn't think all along it was going to make a major dent opening on the 21st. Now, maybe opening on a kind of a weird day on the 12th, it gives it a little bit of momentum, but I think by the time the 21st comes along, it'll have whatever momentum it's going to have in the very beginning will have kind of weaned off a little bit.
Yeah, it'll peter out.
Yeah. So it's really now Aquaman and Bumblebee on that date, plus Mary Poppins a couple days earlier. So it's still a very interesting box office weekend, but I mean, I don't know. What is your feel for this whole Deadpool thing?
I mean, I'm a little, I don't know. I feel like meh about it. Like it's cool, I guess, that they're still, I mean, is it cool? I don't know.
Well, what it's going to be is, I think it's going to be an interesting test for a couple of things.
It's interesting in general.
Yeah. One, it's interesting because we'll see, you know, what a PG-13, will this become a thing? Like, turning an R-rated movie into a PG-13 cut after the fact, does that pay off? But also, you know, this movie made, you know, Deadpool 2 made good money at the box office, and, you know, it's done well in home release, so it's like, by now, you would think most of the people who have wanted to see this movie would have seen it, especially by December 12th. So that's where it's also going to be interesting. A test of, like, well, just how badly do people get into the concept of, like, an event, going to the movie theater to see something? As opposed to, you know, and because we don't usually see this very often. And if you do see a re-release type of thing, it's usually because the movie was such a phenomenon that they send it back into theaters for a limited time, you know, just to make a little extra money, or sometimes for awards purposes. But it's unusual to see something like this that's such a specific thing, where it's got a new title and it's a PG-13 cut, but it's essentially the same movie. It's going to be interesting to see what this thing does, and if it does do quote unquote well, whatever well is for this, whatever they expect to do in 12 days, you know, what does that mean for the future of these types of things?
Right. Yeah, it's so unorthodox for a film like that. I almost feel like they're doing it to beat the first film. Could we make that argument? Because domestically, the first movie made more money than the second.
Yeah. Well, even worldwide, I think the first one's about $50 million ahead.
Yeah. Almost $50 million exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so maybe it's just trying to make its money back better than for, I don't know if that's what they're trying to do. I doubt it.
Or it could just be, in typical Deadpool fashion. I mean, everything about Deadpool, from the making of the first movie to the marketing of all these movies, has been sort of like, you know, we're just going to do whatever. We're going to defy the logic of, you know, cinema and everything. It's paid off. So we'll see if it continues to pay off for them.
I mean, could it? Do we think it would make? I mean, what would we think it would make
in the box office?
Like,
I mean,
in its stretch,
I have no idea. Like I said, I have no feel for this whatsoever. I don't know if people will go
another $100 million.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, in 12 days, that'd be pretty crazy,
right?
I mean,
would that be crazy?
That'd be insanity. If it did that, I think it's going to be a hell of a conversation about a lot of things.
If it gets close to $100 million, that's still crazy.
I mean, I think if it does in 12 days, if it does 20 million, I think you'd be happy with that, right? I mean,
well, any money is. I mean, some money.
Yeah.
It's money.
I'm pretty sure the one day of footage that they spent cutting these new scenes in and whatever edits they had to do didn't equal $20 million. But
no, definitely not. I mean, what's Fred Savage doing these days?
He got that Girl Meets World. Is that even still a show, Girl Meets World?
Wait, that's the wrong Savage.
Oh, that's Ben Savage. Fred Savage was the Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he did have a show on NBC, though, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. I forgot what it was, though, because I didn't watch it.
I'm thinking of Comic-Con still, when we missed out on our chance to meet the cast of Girl Meets World / Boy Meets World.
Right, yeah. Right.
Oh, well. But, yeah, I don't know what... I mean, I would think you'd have to... The expectations can't be too incredibly high for this, as far as that goes. But, you know, what will be interesting, too, is to see... How, like, do people who have already seen the movie go back looking at it as, like, a new thing? Like, what, you know, how much of this audience is going to be people who didn't get a chance to see the original in theaters, and how much of this are people that are going to want to see this new version of it just, like, because it's a novelty? Yeah.
Right. Right. That, yeah, it's coming out on a Wednesday?
Yeah. Yep.
And ahead of Mortal Engines, which, gosh, that's a Peter Jackson film. Who knows how that's going to do? Oh, and then, like, right before Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, well, December's, we know, is pretty crowded, but...
Oof, man. Yeah, I am intrigued. I will be watching how this shakes out. I'd be surprised if it did number one. Actually, it might hurt Spider-Man.
I mean, it might. I would think those are two different audiences,
sort of,
in the sense.
But they're still comic book movies.
They are, but
one is animated. I mean, let's see. What's the rating of Spider-Man Spider-Verse? Rated yet.
Yeah, Deadpool probably is PG. Still a PG-13 cut of a movie that was an R-rated movie. So I don't know that you're still going to take, like, little kids to see it.
Right.
So, I do think that the audience, while there will be some crossover, will be different. There's going to be a core element to the Spider-Man audience that's going to be different, much younger.
Right, right. Yeah, because it's an animated feature, and it has a talking pig.
Yes, but I also still have no feel for what Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is going to do either. As far as box office, because it's such a unique thing. Like, does it follow, and we've spoken about this already, but is it going to follow the path of, like, other, you know, is it going to be like a Lego Batman movie? Is it going to be like, you know, a Disney animated movie? Or is it going to be like, you know, when Batman Mask of the Phantasm was released in theaters?
I see what you're saying. It feels... You know, again, having seen the first 30 minutes of it, 35 minutes of the film, it feels a la Mask of the Phantasm a bit. There is definitely humor and a little teenage vibe to it, but it is kind of violent. And there is, no shocker here, but Peter Parker dies. In the first 30 minutes of the film. A version of Peter Parker dies, I should say. I don't really know how... I guess it's probably a Lego Batman type film.
Yeah,
to a degree.
Which in that case, I mean, I know that people thought that was a little bit of a disappointment, even though it did pretty well, mainly because it was following the Lego movie, which was a phenomenon.
Right.
So I think people kind of expected Lego Batman to do in the ballpark of that, which I don't know if that was ever realistic. Mm. But it did really well anyway.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, if it does those kinds of numbers, I think that's... You're very happy if you're Sony.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think it should do well, but then again, I mean, it's... that whole 3-week... Our 2-week stretch of time is going to be a very interesting and fascinating period of time to watch, because you've got now. Deadpool is still very much a contender to it's very much a contender to Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse, despite the fact that it's the movie's already been released earlier in the year. And then you've got Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse. You've got Disney's. What is the name of that movie? Mary Poppins Returns. And then you've got Aquaman. and Bumblebee.
Yes. Jeez. Man, so Aquaman is the one that we're going to kind of talk a little bit about now because, you know, we're seeing the early projections. Now, I put very little into these days. I look at them like pre-election polls now. It's like, whatever, just talk to me when the day comes and I'll worry about it then. Because, you know, these right now it's trending anywhere between 40 and 65 million for the opening weekend, which seems low. Now, when you consider the fact that Bumblebee is also opening on that same day, maybe there's a little, and Mary Poppins Returns will, that'll still be in the middle of its 5-day opening weekend. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, you could see that, okay, there's only so many theaters, there's only so many screens, so something's got to give there. I still think that that seems awfully low, though. I mean, you're talking about, you're telling me this movie's not going to make as much as, like, forget about Venom, but like Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Right.
I mean, could it, I guess if everything doesn't fall right for Warner Brothers, I mean, if that happens, 40 to 65 million, I don't know. I just feel like that's low. And we've seen historically a lot of these types of movies do wind up coming in much higher than their pre. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Venom was what, at like 65 and then it did 80. Obviously, we all know Wonder Woman was at like 65 and it did 100. So,
right,
you know, we've
right.
seen the momentum pick up later for these types of movies. The only thing is obviously the competition. Mm-hmm. And that's always going, that was always going to be the key. But I would be very surprised if Aquaman only does between 40 and 65 million. And what's interesting is if you look at the actual totals, like what they project out to be the final totals for these movies, like, they have Mary Poppins Returns and Aquaman doing similar business opening weekend.
But, yeah, more or less.
But if you, they're projecting like Mary Poppins Returns to finish at like 300 and something million and Aquaman to finish at like 150 or 160 million, which I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
that seems, again, yeah, that seems awfully low for Aquaman to me.
Now, is that, that's because of,
yeah, I mean, I don't know what.
Return?
I don't know what they're thinking.
Viewing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're assuming that one movie is going to have. Well, they are not. They obviously they're assuming one movie is going to have better legs than the other.
Right.
You know,
right.
just based on audiences or whatever. But I just see the problem is there's no way to tell that now.
No, there isn't. And then I guess the other thing too is, you know, it's the watchability around at or around Christmas, right? Like. I guess there's, I don't know, and I'm just totally speculating here, but there's that feeling of like, let's go watch a family movie, right? Like around that time, yeah. I'd imagine.
Yeah, sure.
And people go so. And, oh, like the closest thing to a Christmassy type family feel good is Mary Poppins. And so that's where I think general audiences would sway.
Yeah.
To kind of stealing some of the box office thunder from Aquaman,
it's just a problem for me is like it. Look, it's hard enough to try to predict these opening weekend numbers as we've seen, but I mean, the total, you know, domestic gross, like there's so much goes into that. Like it's word of mouth, it's the reviews, mm-hmm. it's the, you know, that none of these things that we know anything about right now. Like we don't know how this movie is going to be received, what the audiences are going to think about it, what the word of mouth is going to be, you know, what the hype is going to be after opening. We have no idea. There's no right. metric. Mm-hmm. I don't even think there's a way you could try to quantify any of those things. I'm sure they have and they have formulas yeah. and whatnot, but I don't think social media hype today or pre-sales today, any of those things are going to tell you what this movie is going to do in week 3 and 4.
Right, so, right. So here's an interesting question. Do you think that, you know, if Venom is any indication, and even I know, you know, we were gonna talk a little bit about Bohemian Rhapsody, but do you think there is a sort of like thumbing your nose at the critics, like or Rotten Tomatoes? So say Rotten Tomatoes gives, you know. Aquaman a sort of rotten score. Do you think fans are just out of spite saying like F that, we're gonna go see the movie in droves anyways and repeat viewing just in spite?
I don't. So I think that there is a core audience that is getting bigger and bigger with every mm-hmm. year, as this type of thing that we do grows, right? This community, right, like that we're a part of, people like us, grows because it's becoming more and more mainstream now. That right. I think the core audience for these
mainstream,
yeah, the core audience for these types of movies is growing. So there are going to be people now that are, they know they're going to go see the new comic book movie opening weekend, and they don't care at all what the reviews are, what the, you know, critics say. They don't care about any of that stuff. They're going to see it and they're going to judge it for themselves. And I, because I think if this was all about trying to get, if people aren't going to go and spend their own money just to say, hey, screw you critics.
Right.
You know, like, I don't, I mean, is there somebody out there that might do that? Maybe, but I don't think that, you know, you're not really showing the critics anything by spending your money to go see a movie you didn't necessarily want to see just to spite them. That doesn't, right, you know, so I just think that what we're seeing is, like, in the case of Venom or in the case of any of these movies, is the core audience that's going to go see these movies on opening weekend is expanding. It's growing because, you know, it's become an event thing now. And especially depending on the time of the year and what else has come out. I mean, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp did really well opening weekend, better mm-hmm. than what you would think. You know, it, and those reviews were good. You look at Wonder mm-hmm. Woman. Wonder Woman's reviews were great. And it did great opening weekend.
Right, right.
You know, if it was all about, you know, kind of thumbing your nose at critics, well, Justice League would have done $150 million opening weekend.
That's true.
You know, so, I think that it's just the point of it is that, you know, and I also still believe that there are plenty of people who go to the movies on opening weekend to see a movie, or in general, that have no idea what the Rotten Tomatoes score of the movie yeah. is. You know, we get very caught up in this stuff because, you know, we talk about it on here and we talk about it on Twitter mm-hmm. and it's part of, like, the community that we're a part of. But most people who go to movies don't know what the Rotten Tomatoes score was. You know, they might have heard from a friend, they might have heard on TV or in a pit that right. whether people thought the movie was good or bad. But, you know, and I still know people who rely on, like, their local film critic to tell them. And because people say, oh, I heard the movie stunk because, like, their critic in their paper was the one guy that didn't like it.
Right, right.
There's still a lot of that. So I think we do put a little bit too much stock sometimes in what, you know, how Rotten Tomatoes can affect a movie.
Right.
Negatively or positively. I think what we see is that it's really more about the word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so mm-hmm. it doesn't matter whether the movie did poorly with the critics. If the audience didn't like it, then it's probably going to struggle.
Yeah, people are just going to say, don't waste your time.
But you look at a movie like Venom, which did poorly with the critics, but the legs on that movie have been pretty strong. And I would have to think it's because the movie certainly generates a reaction from people when they see it. And it probably was received better than, you know, the critics' reviews. And again, it's a hard movie to try to wrap your head around. So it did generate a lot of talk. And I think that's a big reason why. And the time of the year, too, helps.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, the reason why I ask is because so many people sort of are at a place where they're lashing out against Rotten Tomatoes and the critics and the aggregation of you know, what people are rating the film, and it seems and this is, you know, predominantly conversations that happen on Twitter, but it, you know, it feels like people would kind of fight against that by openly promoting the film and maybe twisting, I don't want to say twisting their reaction or word of mouth, the power of the word of mouth, to change the narrative against critics. But it doesn't necessarily matter. Because you're right. The core audience is there and people are going to go to see the film whether the critics say yes or no,
yeah.
or recommend it or not.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, it's funny. For myself, I don't really put much stock in Rotten Tomatoes or critics for that matter because, well, and you know, you and I kind of had a Twitter conversation about this with a couple of other folks. They're judging they're judging the art or the work through a different lens than what a general audience member is going to see the film for, right? They're just going to
enjoy... judging it through a lens, literally.
Yeah, right.
As opposed
to
someone who just goes in to be entertained and to just have a good time.
Yeah, it's just escapism. That's that's what you're going for. Sure. You're like, oh, that looks like a fun movie to see. I'm going to go see it, whatever. Whereas critics are like, okay, was this written well? Was it, you know, was the cinematography done well? You know, blah, 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 blah. And most people really don't have an eye for that stuff anyways. You know what I mean? So I'm interested to see how things shake out for Aquaman, specifically kind of bringing this conversation back to that movie. Because it is a jump start, I'd say, a refresh of the DCU, and a first look at what this new sort of changing guard has produced to a certain degree, because James Wan was in the director's chair, so to speak, at or around the time that Zack Snyder was still working on Justice League and or about to step out. So, I'm really interested to see what James Wan kind of brings to the universe, and, whether or not people embrace this new sort of version of the DCU. I think that at this point in time, people are hit or miss with it. You've got a lot of people who still seem very upset at the way the whole Zack Snyder thing went down, and I've seen people like saying, "Oh, we're gonna boycott Aquaman because of Zack Snyder," which is like, what? Like, do you never want to see a DC film ever? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Well,
And then there are people who are just generally optimistic and want to, you know, want to see this film succeed, want to contribute to its success, obviously, and want to see, you know, DC embrace its characters in new and exciting ways and really create their franchise. Do I think the success of Aquaman is contingent on the future and success, overall success of the DCU? Not necessarily.
Well,
but
yeah, I
do think there will be some impact if it doesn't do well.
Yeah, I think considering the fact that Shazam is still going to happen and the Joker movie is still going to happen, and you would assume that, you know, Birds of Prey is still going to happen. I don't really know. I mean, I think if Aquaman is not a success, again, and that's a relative term because we don't know what their expectations are for it, but if it's not deemed a success by the studio, which is really all that matters, I think the only thing it'll have an effect on is that we just won't see Aquaman again. You know, like it'll just be one more character that will just come and go. Zack Snyder's legacy right now with this DCU is his casting. So, you know, Gal Gadot, that was his casting, and Jason Momoa, that was his casting. So this is still part of his legacy in that sense. Unfortunately, you know, Henry Cavill, which was great casting, doesn't look like we're going to see him again. And we know that it looks like Ben Affleck, you know, might be out as well, which was, you know, also his casting, which was great too at the time. But, you know, it's part of that. But, you know, if Aquaman is not successful, it's not like they're going to cancel Shazam. It's not like they're going to cancel the Joker and Birds of Prey. And it's not like they're going to tell Matt Reeves to stop developing his Batman movie and all this stuff. I just think that we just won't see Aquaman. They'll be like, all right, well, we got him in, you know, two in a fraction of a movie.
Right.
and that'll be it. And that'll be his legacy. And we'll just keep making, you know, we'll keep trudging on. We got Wonder Woman coming out. That's going to, you know, people are going to be excited about that. And, you know, maybe they try to get a Flash movie going faster, you know, or whatever. But
I mean, do you think that at that point, if say Aquaman doesn't do well, do you think they say it's because it still carries the Zack Snyder baggage?
No, because Wonder Woman then would have had the same thing, you know, that to me Wonder Woman is the outlier
then there's the other question. Say Wonder Woman doesn't do as well.
Wonder Woman 1984,
yeah,
I see no I To me, I don't see any way that it doesn't.
I'm not insane. I'm just throwing a hypothetical.
I mean, because we...
I agree. I don't think... I think she'll do way better than she did her first round.
Yeah, I mean, this is the... So the ultimate comparison here to me between with Aquaman is Wonder Woman, the first one. Because here you have... They're getting their first solo movie, and there is an element of either retconning or just sort of ignoring other things.
Yeah.
You know, really, Wonder Woman, aside from the bookends with Bruce Wayne, which, you know, try to tie it in, like that movie retcon stuff from BVS, it ignores essentially everything else, so it stands on its own. And I think you're going to get a similar thing here with Aquaman, so that's why I think it's a fair comparison. Now, do I think it's going to do the same type of box office? No, but you never know. But I don't know. I think that I don't think it has anything to do with Zack Snyder. If the movie doesn't do well, I think it's going to just mainly be because of the fact that, you know, maybe the reviews weren't good. Maybe the word of mouth wasn't good. More, I shouldn't say reviews. Maybe the word of mouth isn't that great, or maybe just not a character that that people really care about. It'll be some other reason. I can't imagine that people are going to stay away from this movie because Zack Snyder cast Jason Momoa in this role.
Right.
Because if you're already on board with Jason Momoa being in the role, well then, thank you, Zack Snyder. Right?
There's no reason
to be upset about that. So, if you're in on that, then I don't know why you would, you know, if the movie doesn't do well, people would try. Look, are there going to be people that try to blame Zack Snyder for it? I'm sure, for clickbait, right? And to try to generate some controversy with some hot take. But that's ridiculous. Let's see what the movie does first before we start to speculate on what happens if it doesn't do well. Because we could also say, well, what happens if it does do really well?
Oh, yeah.
Then
yeah,
what?
I mean, then you're okay, Aquaman 2, Aquaman 3.
Sure.
For sure.
The Wonder Woman Aquaman movie, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting, comparison between, you know, Aquaman and Wonder Woman, and you can almost see the similarities between how they're shifting what they once were, right? So, for example, look at the costumes. We talked about this at length, like when we talked about our Wonder Woman episode, well, sort of Wonder Woman episode, and conversations we've had on Twitter for many, 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 many years. You know, that costume certainly changed. Got a lot brighter, from BVS to the Wonder Woman solo film, and even changed in the marketing material for Wonder Woman as they started to brighten things up a little bit. And we're seeing that in all of Aquaman, for example. It's a very vibrant film. He's got the classic, you know, orange and green costume.
Yes.
And it shines, and it's very bright, and it's as if, you know, Aquaman literally hopped off the pages of a comic book.
Yep.
Which is, you know, a radical shift from even Justice League, because he had that sort of dark brass. I don't want to say brassy, but yeah, maybe, you know, tarnished gold.
It's funny, if you last year at this time I was away, and I went to a Walmart in the town that I was in, and they had some leftover like BVS figures, and one of them was Aquaman. And it's amazing how the Aquaman from BVS, which we didn't get to see much in the movie, but the figure that was based on what that look of Aquaman was going to be in this universe, it's like night and day.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
It was like he had like olive pants.
And he had just tattoos all over his body, no shirt, nothing. He just had like a tattooed upper body and like he had like dyed blonde streaks or blonde hair.
Yeah.
It was completely and a thing on his arm. It was a completely different
guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a completely different look. And I'm sure you can go online and just Google, you know, BVS Aquaman figure or whatever and see what I'm talking about. But the look has shifted. And then even in Justice League. So if you look at BVS to Justice League and now to this Aquaman solo movie, the look has even more dramatically than Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman, it was the same costume, it just
they were kind of scrubbing it.
Yeah, the color palette changed,
right?
And the concept behind the meaning, like without the blood and all that stuff that was supposed to be the red, that all went away. But this is literally different outfits. Like you've seen three different outfits now for this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I'm sure, you know, I'm rooting for it. I hope it does really well. There will likely be a Revengers watch party. So there's that.
And Aaron will be there because we've determined that he must. I know he's talked about it on Twitter that he's not going to go. He's not sure if he's going to go see this movie. He will be there. What I'm assuming is opening weekend sometime, and he will be watching Aquaman.
I will be there. I will be there. I'm cool.
Yeah. So I know you were very excited about this Explorers news. So why don't you?
Excited, sort of. Carrie Fukunaga. Sorry, I'm going to do an extra U in there. And David Lowry are apparently writing a pilot and show Bible for one of my all-time favorite childhood movies called The Explorers with a very, very young Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix. And it's going to be a TV show for the Paramount Network, I guess. Is it? That's the new – it's one of the new – I guess
Paramount Network used to be Spike. TV.
Did not realize that.
Yes.
Cool. This is a show that I'm interested in hearing and learning more about. I mean, Cary Fukunaga has quite a roster of interesting development, you know, show development and even movie development under his belt. So I think, you know, it should be in good hands. I'm not really sure who David Lowry is, but gosh, they better treat this with respect, man. This is my childhood we're talking to. This is literally like I put a lot of stock in this movie. Because it was so 80s. It was about a bunch of outcasts who come together.
Yeah, like sci-fi comic book geeks.
Yeah, it's like sci-fi Goonies, honestly.
Yeah, right, basically.
It really is. And I freaking love that movie. And I don't know. I need it to be done respectfully.
You know, it's funny because a couple of shows ago, Tavo had asked a question about, like, talking about Cobra Kai, like what 80s movies would we like to see be done as like to be brought back as like television shows? Well, here you go.
There it is.
So, and I think that the movie is ripe for an update. And I also think it's perfect for a television show.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, now I don't revere the movie like you do. But I think that just the general premise and the idea of this as a television show in modern times, I think has me pretty excited.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting story. It's
plus
like
the creative team, too.
Right. It's a bunch of kids who are communicated to by aliens and are sort of connected to build a spaceship to get them to space. For what reason, I don't remember, other than the fact that they just wanted to meet humans, I guess, if I remember correctly. It's interesting. And there is I think if they do it a la Stranger Things, there's a lot of potential. There really is. I really hope they do a good job with it. Otherwise they might be damaging a little bit of my childhood and I'll have to pay my shrink again for some leather couch time.
Nice.
Anyways.
All right. So let's jump into the questions.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we have, all right. We'll start with Tavo. So Tavo says, what are your favorite B movies and what do you guys think makes those B movies worthwhile? So he gave an example. He says that he finds Equilibrium an excellent B movie because of its premise and actual great performance by Christian Bale 3 years before Batman Begins.
Honestly, can I be honest about Equilibrium?
No, you cannot be honest about it.
I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, Equilibrium, and it's funny because so now when I think of B movies, like, I mean, and Equilibrium was like a $20 million sci-fi movie, which I guess by the standards of sci-fi is not a particularly big budget.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I think of B movies, like my mind goes in a very different direction. Like I'm thinking like Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh yeah.
I'm thinking like The Blob, the remake, the Chuck Russell remake with Kevin Dillon and Shawnee Scott. I'm thinking of like The Toxic Avenger and like Tremors and like movies like that. Like those to me are like real B movies. Like, and those happen to be some of my favorites also. Another series of B movies that I find to be an ultimate guilty pleasure is, it's not even so much the first one, because the first one I guess technically doesn't qualify as a B movie because it was, you know, a theatrical release with a, you know, modest budget, but the Substitute franchise.
Oh my God, with Tom Berenger.
Well, but he was in the first one, but after that, yeah, they made three direct to like DVD sequels with Treat Williams as the star. And I am a sucker for those movies. Like, really? I will, yes, big time. I watch them every time they're on. Yeah, don't ask. It's just, it's a long story. But a couple weeks ago, the El Rey Network, which is the home of the B movie, had a whole marathon. I watched it like all weekend. So yeah, I have problems. I admit it. First step is admitting it. But yeah, so those are the types of movies I think of like when I think of B movies. And to me, what makes for a good B movie? If it's memorable. You know, like if there's something about it that entertains me and makes me want to watch it again, then I would consider that a great B movie.
Right. God, great B movie. No Retreat, No Surrender. Probably one of my favorite. Early Jean-Claude Van Damme. I have no idea any of the other actors other than that.
Right.
But that's like, yeah, that's like a B movie, I'd say. The Perfect Weapon.
Oh, Jeff Speakman. Now you're getting into like deep, like, I mean,
those
we could
deep cuts.
We could run through action movies. I mean, all
but like that's, I mean, like, yeah, you know, those are awesome to me. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's like a sci-fi. I mean, The Explorers would be in a B movie, I would think, right? It's not really like a.
Yeah, I mean. It depends. See, to me, the budget is what really makes it like a B movie.
Right.
Like, if the budget is relatively, and I guess it's just more than budget too sometimes, but
yeah. I guess. Yeah, and I mean that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. Oh wait. There's, what was the, oh man, I'm totally blanking on the. It's like a Jim Carrey vampire movie.
Oh, Once Bitten.
Once Bitten.
Yes. Wow. That is a
great
B
one.
Movie. Yeah.
All right.
Tavo's probably hating us right now for all of these. But Tavo, you should watch each and every one of these movies that we just mentioned.
Yeah. They're all good.
Yeah. Speaking of movies that were made on very small budgets, Ron Diesel, he says he knows that we did a Halloween review on the last podcast. He's not sure if we talked about it, but do we think they should have stuck to Michael going after his sister instead of going in a different direction and go from there, because it gives Michael a motivation?
Well, then what would be the point of doing that if they already had the movie, the Halloween 2, right?
Yeah, you know,
It's a good question,
and
but
it's
then
something
it just kind of puts you right back in Halloween 2 territory.
Yeah, it's something that I did think about, because I felt like when we talked about it for like 40 something minutes on the last episode, but you know, the Laurie Strode character I felt was very hollow in that movie, and I almost feel like it would have been better if there was something else to it. And I don't know that it necessarily needed to be the sister angle. Because, plus, like you said, we did it in Halloween 2, and they did it in Halloween H2O. So then you're right. Like, really, it wouldn't have made much sense to go down that road. Like, you're better off just coming up with, like, an original story at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think, to me, it comes down to the execution. They could have told this same story and had the same concept and everything, just executed it better. And I don't think anybody would have had a problem with it. Yeah. But it's making a fortune, so that's a good thing. And it's $230 million worldwide right now on a $10 million budget. So, you know, who cares what we think, really?
Right.
People are going to see it. And, you know, I know you mentioned to me off air that, you know, Blumhouse just hit the $4 billion mark.
Yeah.
Which is insane since their movies cost $12 to make. But
pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm making one right now by rubbing two nickels together.
Yeah. And I mean, they have the formula. They got it figured out, man.
Yeah. And you know what the funny thing is? I didn't know that they started with like the Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Films.
Yes, they did.
Which, you want to talk about like Nights of Sleep? I wish I could have gotten back because those movies creeped me out.
Yes. And made a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So let's see what else we have here. Well, Ron Diesel had another question. He said, aside from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Aquaman, what are our best to worst comic book movies as of right now for 2018? So here's the list so far. Well, and I think it's actually pretty easy for me.
Because
you have Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War, Deadpool 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and, well, Venom. Aquaman hasn't come out yet, obviously. So, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse hasn't come out yet. So, I'm going to put Black Panther 1 over Infinity War, only because I loved Infinity War, and I just really appreciate what they were able to do with that movie, considering the scope and how they were able to handle all of those characters. But Black Panther is just as a singular movie, just everything about that, the characters, the score, the freshness of it, the newness of it. I just loved all of that. And I will watch that movie over again more than I will watch Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go Black Panther 1 and then Infinity War 2. And then Deadpool 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Well, see, here's the thing. So now this is where it gets interesting. Because you got Ant-Man and the Wasp and Venom. I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's fine. It's a nice little briskly paced adventure film. Doesn't leave you with much. Now, Venom, like I talked about on both the Revengers podcast and on our show, that is a movie that has me thinking more than just about, or had me thinking more than just about any movie I've seen this year. Because I just couldn't wrap my head around what my feelings were about it. It's just such an experience that I think for that reason, I'm going to put Venom ahead of Ant-Man and the Wasp. Ant-Man and the Wasp is a better movie, but the experience that is Venom, I mean, if you're looking at what, you know, a movie that's going to elicit the reaction and make you think, like, I've already forgotten pretty much about Ant-Man and the Wasp. I don't know when I'm going to be thinking about Venom for a long time. So I'm going to just put it ahead of Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So I obviously have not seen Venom. I'm shocked that movie garners that kind of reaction where you're like, I'm still thinking or wrestling with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, is it wrestling with
it because it was so bad?
No, it's just
wrestling with it because it was like so different.
It's just such a, like I say, it's just such an experience. It's the performance, what Tom Hardy's doing in that movie is great. A lot of what's happening around him, not so much. But it's just such I still need to see it again. But see, the thing is, I want to see Venom again for that reason. I don't necessarily care if I see Ant-Man and the Wasp ever again. Not that I didn't enjoy it. I did. It's good. You know, it's cute. But I want to see Venom again. I need to sink my teeth into that and figure out what it is. And that's, you know, so for that reason alone, I'm going to just bump it up ahead of. So I'm going Black Panther, Infinity War, Deadpool 2, Venom, and Ant-Man and the Wasp for now.
Mm. Okay.
And what about you? I know you've
seen
see
less
yet,
comic
but...
book movies than you have, so it's we're kind of almost on the same beat. I still think about Black Panther.
Oh yeah, I do too.
I really do. I just think it was such a well done, well put together film that was a great. It wasn't even an origin story, so to speak, more of a coming of age.
Yeah, because you got the origin in Civil War, basically.
Yeah, I mean, but you didn't really either. Because
no, that's true too.
Back, you know, the quick, prologue that you get about Wakanda was as close to a introduction, or you know, I guess yeah, intro story to the character about how it becomes, you know, the Black Panther is the protector of Wakanda and all that. You know, that's as close to a to an origin story as you're going to get in the film. And yeah, I mean, it's just it was a sensational film. That's not to say that I don't like Infinity War, because it's that movie is a cultural moment, as is Black Panther. But, you know, Black Panther just, yeah, it just stuck with me. So that's why I would put it ahead of Infinity War. So it'd be Infinity War 2, Deadpool, obviously, 3, and Ant-Man and the Wasp in the place of 4, only because I haven't seen Venom. So that's kind of where I am.
Yeah, you really have to see Venom. We have to have a very long discussion about Venom.
I know.
Not necessarily on here, but just somewhere. We need to have a very long discussion about that movie.
Yeah. I'll get there. I'm sure it'll be released on demand sometime soon.
Yeah, well, it's still going strong in theaters.
Is it?
Well, pretty much. I mean, it's doing pretty well. It's going to be a little while before it's on demand, I think.
It's kind of funny. People were saying, oh, it's going to make more money than Spider-Man Homecoming.
No.
I'm like, not in a long shot. What
Although
are you talking
it's going to wind up. Because it opens in China, it's at like 540 million or something like that worldwide.
Yeah,
it opens in China this week, so it could do 600 million worldwide, which is not Spider-Man Homecoming numbers, but it's pretty good. If I would have told you Venom was going to do 600 million worldwide, mm-hmm. I don't think you would have been like, no.
Yeah.
And over 200 million domestic.
Hmm. Yeah, bad. That's yeah. That is interesting. I totally underestimated the impact of that film.
Yeah,
like,
so,
for sure.
So go see it.
Yeah, all right.
Then we can talk about it. And something else you need to be able to talk about that you need to go see, because a Nerdy Nick's Nook, he asked, what are your story expectations for Young Justice Season 3, which is the new Young Justice Outsiders that's going to be on DC Universe? And I know you were like, oh, maybe I should watch season 1 and 2 first. It's very disappointing.
I got crucified
for
that.
You have not watched, because that was a great show. It still is, hopefully. So my thing is, I already kind of know, I've read a little bit already about what the season is going to be about, and it's going to be revolving around, like, metahuman trafficking and stuff like that, and obviously the Outsiders are going to be involved, and so... You know, I don't necessarily have story expectations, and I can't get into too much since Aaron hasn't watched the first two seasons yet, and I would like him to, with a relatively fresh mind. So I don't want to get into too much of the details, which there's no way for me to really address specific things that I'd like to see without giving away stuff from the previous season. So I'm just hoping it's great, because I have very high expectations for that show. Young Justice was one of the great surprises, I feel like, and it's one of those great underrated shows. It's so much more than I think what people expect it to be. It's a very deep show. And you should definitely watch it. I think you're going to love it. So
Okay.
Yeah. Take a crack at that. I think those seasons are up, right, on DC Universe, so.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Yeah, so go. You should do that. Then go see Venom. So binge watch Young Justice, and then go watch Venom.
I mean, now that I've stopped watching Titans, now I've got something else to pick up.
There you go. So,
all right.
All right. So, Brandon,
I will check that out.
You should, definitely. Brandon Alvarado says, take a comic book character, throw a supernatural horror spin to it for a live action miniseries. Also, what are your thoughts on the parallel universe Marvel Zombies series? So this is easy for me because I've already spoken about this when we talked about shows like for DC Universe or things we'd like to see. Mm-hmm. I've said over and over again, the Spectre. I want to see a horror supernatural Spectre series in the feel of the animated DC Showcase short that they did, which was kind of made to look like a grindhouse sort of movie. I think it would be amazing. So even though I've already spoken about that, since that question kind of describes exactly what I would like to see in a Spectre show, that's my pick. I want to see a supernatural horror. I don't even want to see a mini show. I want to see a full-on show, 10 episodes, whatever, of the Spectre in supernatural horror with that grindhouse score from that animated short.
But is that, I mean, that is that already a, I know nothing of Spectre. Is that already a horror?
Well,
character?
The character's definitely supernatural. And I mean, it doesn't say that, I mean, I know he specifically wants us to take a non-supernatural horror character and flip them into that. I don't know, but the character is kind of supernatural already, so kind of fits, but.
Gotcha. That's just a good question. I'd like to see Dead Man.
That's another one. Love Dead Man. Yeah.
Yeah. I really would. I think that'd be cool. And you know what would also be cool? You know what we should reboot? You know, well, not we, but you know who they should reboot?
Oh, okay.
Is Darkman.
Well, now, from Sam Raimi's movie?
Yeah.
But does that count as a horror? That's not a comic book character, though.
I know it's not.
It's just because Sam Raimi couldn't get.
It kind of feels like.
Yeah, well, because he couldn't get the rights to Batman, so he made Darkman.
Darkman. But they should do that again.
I agree. I'm a big fan of Darkman. And talking about B movies, I'm a fan of the two direct to DVD sequels as well. With Larry Drake.
With the guy that played the Mummy.
Yes, right? Arnold Vosloo. I don't know
what was that guy's name.
Arnold Vosloo.
Arnold Vosloo.
Yeah, I believe he's also in Hard Target with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
He plays the villain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the Lance Henriks, not the main guy. But
Right. Yeah, like the henchman.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm, good stuff.
There you go.
Yeah, and in terms of Marvel Zombies, I love that stuff. I think they should turn that into an animated feature.
That would be cool.
Right?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
Like, we actually, you know, when I think about that, we don't really get much of those.
From Marvel? Well, they were for a while. They started...
like, I saw the Black Panther one that they did, like,
well, that was like a motion comic, but they actually had a run where they were doing their own animated. They did the two Ultimate Avengers animated movies. They did a
I own those.
Yep, they did a Doctor Strange one that was really good. Doctor Strange the Sorcerer Supreme, which was done by a lot of the people tied into that were people who had worked on Batman the Animated Series, not the main guys like Paul Dini and Alan Burnett and Bruce Timm, but other writers and directors. Mm-hmm. There was a Thor one, there was an Iron Man one, there was an Incredible Hulk, a couple Hulk ones, there's a Planet Hulk they did, which was really cool.
Those too, yeah.
So then they just stopped doing them. So, I don't know why. Some of them were very good. Some of them were whatever.
Yeah, wasn't there a Thor versus Loki
as well? Well, there was a Thor Tales from Asgard, which was like a young Thor.
Right.
And then
right.
there was a
There was a versus too.
There was a versus. So there was one where it's Hulk versus, it's called, and he faces Thor and he faces Wolverine. Those are very good as well. So yeah, there was some good ones. Then they made a couple recent ones that were, I think, supposed to tie in more to like the modern universe, and they were really poorly received, and the animation supposedly wasn't very good, so they didn't really go anywhere, and then they just kind of stopped. But there's actually a box set you can get somewhere that has like all of them together. There was a even like a Young Avengers movie in there too. So
there's always a box set.
Yep.
Always a box set. Cool.
All right. So let's see what else we got here. Actually, I think that's it.
Are we done?
Yeah.
All right.
We are.
Well, guys, thanks as always for submitting your questions. It, you know, keeps the show alive to a degree, and we just love engaging with you guys and answering your questions and, you know, giving our hot takes on your questions. So thanks.
And I would like if next week, if at least four people could ask the question of whether Aaron has seen Young Justice Season 1 and 2 and Venom yet.
I got to add it to my list, man. I was like, my wife and I were housing the Haunting of Hill House, and which was a phenomenal
show. Did you finish it?
I did finish it.
Okay, so I just have this one quick
thing.
I don't want to be spoiled. I don't want anything. Yeah. And I'm not going to say what, because a friend of mine said something about the ending. And all I'm going to ask is, were you satisfied with the ending?
No, okay,
because that's what they said.
No, I was not satisfied with the ending.
Got it. Okay. I'm just going to leave it at that, because I am going to watch it. But
yeah, and if I'm... And if I'm being, this isn't really spoiler territory. And it's not like it's left open either, but I don't want another series.
Wow.
Like I don't want a season two.
Okay. Wow. Interesting.
Because I think the problem is that with stuff like this, you can't do another you know what I mean? You can't just introduce another family. It's just kind of weird. It's like,
I mean, you could.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, that's the whole reason why I think they decided to, you know, for American Horror Story, move it to a complete, you know, to do something different.
Sure.
Because it's just a little weird. It's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe they will.
I hope they just leave it alone.
Or maybe they will just leave it alone. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, but it's a fascinating show, that does a lot with, I guess, time and perspective.
There you go.
And I'll leave it at that. All
right. Yes, let's leave it at that.
But you should totally check it out.
You should, and of course, you should also go to thefanboygarage.com. You can listen to our current episode, our past episodes. You can buy some merch from our merch store, help support the show, use our Amazon associate link to do your Amazon shopping, and you can send Aaron emails encouraging him to watch Young Justice and Venom by clicking on the Contact the Show button on that site. And of course, you can join the conversation by tweeting us at the Fanboy Garage, and you can tweet me at RealCLMighty.
And you can tweet me at Starting Sith as well on Twitter, and you can check out our Instagram page, which really doesn't have many photos.
Well, it will. Give it time.
Yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll get there. But if there's, you know, if you want to reach out to us on Twitter, you can do that, and Instagram. And the website to do that.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
And that's it. And I hope we have some other content and things like that, like watch alongs or, you know, live footage, live content captured from a watch party once we've got a little bit more time.
So. We definitely have a watch along planned.
Yeah.
And we just haven't.
Although maybe we should do Venom.
You know what? Well, that's but, a little bit more down the road, but yeah, we just haven't logistically been able to figure it out because it's a lot of moving parts here at the Fanboy Garage. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think some people will be very excited though when we do finally get a chance to do it. But it is in the works, and hopefully in the next.
Have you
few
seen
weeks.
It since?
No, and I'm trying not to
okay,
for that
that's
reason.
Great. Good. Yes. Don't.
Yeah. Well, don't. I haven't really had much of a choice, but yes, I'm actually, I would like to not watch it until that moment because I want to kind of come from that perspective.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
All right, guys. Well, let's close the garage door and get the hell out of here.
Take care, everybody.
Bye, guys.